I'm just not ready to buy in quite as much as you are, Creever. You sound a little fanboyish, and that's fine. You can be a Johnny Football fanboy all day.
That is hitting below the belt. That one hurt.
Say hello to week 10 of the CFL season, and thus week 10 of the CFL Fantasy Podcast as we are underway. $10,000 is what the season-long winner is going to get. Go to cflfantasy.tsn.ca. You still have an opportunity to win some good cash, whether it's week 10 or whether it's the entire season. Get your lineups in for CFL Fantasy. Welcome to the program. My name is Pat Steinberg, joined alongside Hannah Nordman and Jeff Creever. Guys, we're back to a full slate in week 10. We had just three games in week 9, but four games this week. We got lots to talk about. Daron Carter has been released. Where does he end up? What does that mean for fantasy football? Yes, you certainly heard this right. Johnny Manziel did not throw four interceptions. However, still lots of question marks about Johnny Manziel coming out of his second CFL start. And is Travis Lule all of a sudden a guy that you enter into the conversation as one of the CFL's elite quarterbacks? We'll touch on all those things this week on the CFL Fantasy Podcast. But guys, it sounds like you both had exciting weekends. I hear through the grapevine that Hannah actually did something that does not include work over the weekend, which I think is very exciting. I worry about you.
Are the rumors true?
They're true. I did a thing, guys. And by a thing, I mean I went to the Jays game, and it was sunny and nice, and the roof was open, and they won, which was not expected, a nice surprise. But make no mistake, there was a lot of work in there, too. I just got away from the office for one day and saw some sunshine for the first time this summer, it feels like.
It's a fun summer event. It's always good to get out to the ballpark. I'm just waiting for Vladdy to get called up. That's what I think a lot of Jays fans here in the city are waiting for. Vladimir Guerrero to start mashing baseballs. I had a pretty good weekend myself, and it was made a lot better when I won another week in CFL Fantasy. Just have to throw that in there right off the top. I know you guys are hoping
we haven't even got to that yet. Jeez, hold off.
Easy.
Well, you know, I just got to get my shots in. I kind of picture that situation where Homer's dancing around with the degree going, I am so smart, and, SMRT, I'm going to end up putting my foot in my mouth somewhere down the line with another 45-point week. I'm asking for it with the karma here. I just got to spend some time out in the sun and went to a little bit of a food festival, bought the new Madden game, but I didn't spend all my weekend indoors playing football. And then we also have fantasy drafts coming up for fantasy football on the NFL side of things. So keeping busy, and also, of course, watching Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, doing his thing, and Daron Carter with that news that took the league by storm on Saturday night. So it was a busy weekend for me. Pat, what did you get up to?
I got out to the mountains, which was nice. I was able to get out to Fernie, British Columbia. It's about a 3-hour drive from Calgary, so was able to get out there, spend some time in the mountains. But it was ridiculously hot out west. We got in Calgary on Friday. We got up to a record-setting temperature, 36.5 degrees. Now here's, I know that's, you know, you guys are like, oh yeah, we've experienced hotter than that with your 100% humidity. I get that, but it was hot for Calgary, and the entire province of British Columbia is on fire right now. So everywhere in BC and Alberta, smoke everywhere. So you're outdoors, but it was bizarre. You couldn't see 10 meters down the road for a lot of the days because it was so smoky. The sun looks so hazy right now. So spent lots of time outside, got some time in the mountains, but very, very hazy in this part of the world right now with forest fire season underway. So that was my weekend. I'm very happy to hear that Hannah got away from work for a little bit because it's a lot of work you do, Hannah. I feel for you. So I'm like, even just a little bit of free time, I think, is very well deserved.
It's not that I don't get weekends. It's just that my weekends happen on a, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, a non-traditional weekend.
Please, Pat, we get it. Mountains, Alberta, Calgary, mountains, we get it. Drive 3 hours.
Come and check it out one day.
You're in the mountains. My goodness, 100% humidity. Is that even possible? Is that even a thing?
Yeah, it's called raining.
100% humidity. I wish I could drive 3 hours and be in the mountains. Where are we here if we drive 3 hours? Buffalo, maybe.
Pretty much the same thing.
Which is not as nice as the mountains, I can tell you that much. Then Buffalo, New York, I'm sure it's got some redeeming qualities, but I haven't seen a lot of them in my travels there. It was a very strange week 9 of the season. We only had 3 games, and it was not what you would call a banner week for performances, as all of our top performers ended up coming under 23 points. In terms of our little internal competition, congratulations to Jeff once again. He had the highest score of the three of us, 110.8. Hannah next at 104.2. I came in at 91.2 when it was all said and done. But 22 was kind of the magic number, guys. 8 players all led the pack with 22 points. A very strange coincidence. That included Mike Riley, Trevor Harris, and Jeremiah Mazzoli, a couple of running backs, and 3 receivers. But credit to the CFL Fantasy Podcast. We gave some good advice last week because 2 of the biggest steals came from our bargain bin, our money picks last week. Hannah's RJ Harris had 19 points for Ottawa, and my pick of Kevin Elliott for BC was right there with 18.9 points. And our locks of the week ended up with some of the highest performers as well, Trevor Harris and Darrell Walker. Duke Williams on the other side for Edmonton struggled once again. Another single-digit point week for him at 8.6, and Jalen Saunders was Craver's lock of the week, but injury kind of knocked him out of being able to give you any type of good return, just 3.6 points. And a week of disappointments: Darvin Adams, BJ Cunningham, Brian Burnham, Manuel Arsenault, Luke Tasker, all of those guys put up less than 5 points. So a difficult week if you had any of those gentlemen. So there was lots to talk about regardless coming into week 10. We've got 4 games. We've got some really interesting matchups. And one of those interesting matchups was Saskatchewan-Calgary. And I was really interested, coming off his performance going back to week 8, I was really interested to see Daron Carter in his second game back at receiver, guys. But all of a sudden, we get the news over the weekend. I was as stunned as anybody else when we found out the Riders have released Daron Carter at receiver. Remember, in his return, he had 3 catches for 59 yards and a touchdown after playing defensive back for most of the year. So I was stunned by this move, as Daron Carter is now a free agent. But guys, how shocked were you to see Daron Carter released in Saskatchewan, especially knowing that they had just made the move to bring him back to receiver?
Yeah, when I found out about Daron Carter being released, it was actually a funny story, because I was on the game, I was covering the game that was going on. As you know, this was happening during the Alouettes Red Blacks game, and Daron Carter kind of tweeted out, "Well, it's been real," or whatever he said, kind of a cryptic tweet hinting that he had been released. And being the acting editor at the time on CFL.ca, I'm kind of going, well, I'm not touching this, because, you know, in the past, Daron Carter's sort of been misleading at times, or sometimes he just wants that attention. You never know what's real there. And then sure enough, the release goes out. And yeah, it was one of those moments where I didn't believe it at first. It was that shocking. It was stunning. This is a player that is possibly, depending on who you ask, but for a lot of people, is a top 5 receiver in the CFL. Daron Carter is an amazing receiver. And, you know, I guess in the end, whatever the philosophy is there from Chris Jones and from the Riders, and whatever was going on behind the scenes that we don't see, I guess the bad of it all outweighed the good, I guess. And I guess by quite a bit, to give up on a talent like that.
Yeah, I was at work and I noticed when my Twitter exploded, because I was in the thick of things. I was watching the game as well, and kind of went back and forth with one of my buddies in Winnipeg on what we thought could have happened, and really couldn't come to a decision, kind of hypothesizing possibly an NFL tryout. But no, this seems like a straight release. The question is, what could it have been? There's obviously interest from other teams. Would you not go the trade route? Why was that not a possibility?
The whole thing was just really strange, guys. I mean, I sat there and I thought about it to myself, and then I listened to Chris Jones over the weekend, and he didn't really give us, and I'm not expecting Chris Jones to come out and tell us exactly what was going on behind the scenes, but the explanation we got just kind of said, yeah, well, you know, we saw things differently and we decided to go in a different direction. And I guess I thought to myself, you've got an anemic offense to begin with. I mean, we all know how strong Saskatchewan can be defensively, but on the offensive side of the ball, their top receiver is just barely in the top 30 in Naaman Roosevelt. They've had all kinds of quarterback issues with Zach Caleros and Brandon Bridge and consistency. And now you're taking away the number one target, or a number one target, potential number one target from these quarterbacks. And that's the fascinating angle to me, is where Saskatchewan goes from here. Because, you know, you take a look at it and you see all kinds of reports suggesting that Carter has interest from across the league, but where do the Riders go from here? Carter barely played with the offense. He comes back for a game, catches a touchdown pass, three passes for 59 yards, and he jumped right back in like he hadn't left. This guy is as freakish and athletic talent as you're going to find in the CFL. So from a football perspective, strictly football, this one is really hard to wrap your head around.
I mentioned how surprised I was, but look, I'm not buying the where do they go from here argument. I'm not. I just... Chris Jones knows what he's doing, and from a football perspective, I can't think of a receiver ever in the history of the CFL that has single-handedly floated his team and made his team a contender. The Riders have a philosophy here. They know what they're doing. Let's be honest. Chris Jones knows how he's going to win football games. He's not attacking down the field. He's not going vertical. He's even admitted as much. Jerron Carter is an amazing player, but Chris Jones isn't sitting there going, "What are we going to do now?" That's not what's happening here. I mean, the Riders have other good receivers, but they're winning the game. They're winning football games with their amazing defense and their defensive ends that disrupt opposing quarterbacks. They're holding teams to a low amount of points. They're forcing turnovers and they're running the ball. They're playing a ball possession game. They're trying to do what the Stamps have done.
Yeah, but they're below 500. They're a below 500 team. And if you, like, I'm not saying that Jerron Carter leaving is going to sewer the Riders. I'm just saying you took another target away from the quarterback, whoever it is, Caleros Bridge, who, like, we don't know the injury situations going forward, all of that. But, you know, from Zach Caleros' standpoint, you just took away another target. They are not a target-rich environment to begin with. They're below 500. Their defense is great. I grant you that. But they're on the field too much right now because this team doesn't move the ball as effectively as they need to. So I'm not saying that losing Jerron Carter is going to sewer their season. I'm just saying, okay, you just took another target away from an offense that doesn't have a lot of big time playmakers. So now what? Who's going to step up and be those big time playmakers?
It's hard to argue that this makes them a better team.
Does it make them that much of a worse team though? I mean, look, Pat, you hit the nail on the head in saying that this is a team that's deficient in targets. Receivers aren't getting targets. So maybe Jerron Carter was a little bit miscast there. Maybe this was a square peg in a round hole. This guy's complaining about targets. Jerron Carter's a gifted receiver where he should be getting 10 or 15 targets a game. And he wasn't getting that because they weren't utilizing him. They're not utilizing Naaman Roosevelt. They just don't have the quarterback to get the job done, and they don't have the confidence in their offense to get the job done. Everybody thought, here's where I relate it. Here's where I draw the best parallel, and this has always been the case throughout the history of the CFL. Great quarterbacks in this league make great receivers, not the other way around. Brandon Zylstra, he took off and became great because of Mike Riley, and when Brandon Zylstra left and Adarius Bowman left, everybody was going, "But Jeff, the Eskimos lost all their receivers. They're not going to be the same. Mike Riley's not going to put up these prolific numbers that we're used to." Yes, he is, because whoever's stepping in there is going to get that opportunity. And Mike Riley, one of the greatest quarterbacks around, one of the greatest quarterbacks of our era, is going to get him, going to get these guys the football. And Duke Williams is doing everything that Brandon Zylstra did last year. So I don't buy this thing that it's the receiver that makes the offense. I think it's the other way around, and the Riders know how they're winning football games. If Jerron Carter is being disruptive because he's not getting the football the way that he should be, that's not a good fit. And maybe moving on, maybe the players and the coach and all of those guys accepting the identity that they need to win football games without having a great quarterback, maybe that makes them a better football team. And I know that this is getting away from the fantasy angle that we're talking about, and we'll get back on track with that. But I just don't think that losing Jerron Carter is going to hurt this offense, because they weren't leaning on him that way. Not this season, anyway.
Well, let's bring it back to fantasy then, because there are suggestions, reports out there from multiple different sources that there is interest in Jerron Carter. We've heard the BC Lions, the Toronto Argonauts, Montreal Alouettes, and Hamilton Tiger Cats are all interested in some form or another in his services. So, Hannah, and do any of those teams jump off the page to you as a real ideal fit? And specifically from a fantasy standpoint, is there a landing spot that you'd like to see for Jerron Carter?
Well, the best fit that you could find is where he can bring the most value. And I think I would have a fun time watching him catch passes from Johnny Manziel.
Yes.
right?
Yes.
That would be fun.
Thank you.
They need some help. I saw a lot of drops on that offense, and maybe a guy like that can start reeling them in, and these two could find some serious chemistry. That's a big if, but maybe.
Just the entertainment value alone would make this worth it. Johnny Manziel and Daron Carter on the same offense?
Yeah, I'm with you there. It would certainly be entertaining, even if it is just on the outside when it comes to press clippings and comments before and after games. I think it would be really entertaining, but potentially on the field as well. And I know that we're going to talk about Johnny Manziel a little bit later on, but Daron Carter is currently teamless. Does he end up somewhere else? We shall wait and see. And it's funny, guys, I'm actually on the same page as the two of you. When I look at an actual place where I think might be a good fit, I do look at Montreal, because Daron Carter would go back to the Alouettes where he was before Saskatchewan, but he would go back to the Alouettes and he would be the guy there. That's no knock on Ernest Jackson or BJ Cunningham, but you bring Daron Carter in, he would be a huge part of that offense and a big time target. So I'm very interested to see where Daron ends up and if he does indeed play this season.
Let me interrupt you there for a second, because I didn't get a chance to really go in, and I agree with Hannah. The teams that are interested, I do think that the Owls would be a very interesting scenario. But I'm just having this thought in my head, and I know it's probably more fantasy than anything. Not this kind of fantasy, more like living off in dream world or wherever, somewhere else that's not a realistic place, the land of chocolate. Where's that again? I want to see him in Calgary. I want to see him in Calgary. I mean, I know, Pat, you're out there and you're in Calgary all the time, and you can probably say that this wouldn't work. Maybe he's not a Dave Dickinson and a John Huffnagel type of guy, but hey, everybody said he's not a Mark Trestman guy, and the Argos are apparently interested. But imagine the plot, the scenario where Daron Carter is catching passes from Bo Levi Mitchell. He goes to the team that's 7-0 and is the best team in the CFL. And he's the villain of the league, and yet he's the one in November that's probably raising the Grey Cup over his head. I would just love to see that. And from a fantasy perspective, he'd fit right in there. Hey, Eric Rogers is out for a while. I don't know why the Stamps haven't been mentioned in this, but maybe that's why. Maybe he's just not a Dickinson and Huffnagel guy. I would love that. I'd love it.
Say this much. The Stampeders locker room is definitely the type of room that could absorb a personality like Daron Carter. But in saying that, if he was complaining about his targets in Saskatchewan, where he was one of the top receivers, there's a whole lot more to spread around in Calgary. Like that's a lot of hungry mouths when it comes to the receivers on this, and even with Eric Rogers on the sidelines. But I do think from a personality standpoint, with Huffnagel, with Dickinson, with the leadership from guys like Bo Levi Mitchell, so on and so forth, I do think he could come in and be the worries about his personality would be a whole lot less with the Calgary Stampeders. I think it'd be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it'd be very interesting to see if he were to end up in red and white. Look, we don't know where Daron Carter is going to end up. We do know he will not be playing for Saskatchewan on Sunday when the Riders take on the aforementioned Stampeders, and we'll see if he finds himself a landing spot a little bit later on this season. Okay, lots to talk about. Week 10 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast is well underway. Jeff Creever, Hannah Nordman, my name is Pat Steinberg. Now it's time for Hannah to get you up to date on everything you need to know for week number 10. It's time for our Fantasy Flash.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
All right, well, Pat, you said, where do they go from here? Well, the Riders have brought back veteran running back Cameron Marshall. Marshall spent 2017 with the team before being released. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into the team's offensive plans. Bombers wide receiver Weston Dressler could miss some time, according to Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press. He left last game with an injury and didn't practice as of Monday. According to TSN's Dave Naylor, the Montreal Alouettes should be considered the favorite to land recently released Daron Carter. Carter was let go Saturday by the Riders and is rumored to have interest from three teams in total, with the Lions reportedly dropping out of the mix. At Lions practice, running back Jeremiah Johnson is working with the starters. He missed last week's game and looks to be on track for a Week 10 return. That would likely put Trayvon Van back on the bench. Also in BC, receiver Ricky Collins did not participate in practice practice early in the week. Keep an eye on his status. If he doesn't play, it could mean more of an opportunity for Kevin Elliott. We haven't heard anything out of Stamps practice yet, but we expect to see Don Jackson back in the lineup at tailback. Don't forget, Eric Rogers will be out at least the next little while after reportedly undergoing minor knee surgery. And there's a chance that Argos will have Anthony Coombs in their lineup for the first time this year. Coombs was apparently close before the bye week, but the team decided to wait it out.
I want to pick up where we left off on the Daron Carter stuff. And Pat, we had a little bit of a heated debate earlier, which was, there were some really good points brought up, and it's where do the Riders go from here? And that's what you said. Maybe Chris Jones is asking that right now. We may have differences of opinion. To me, this signals an entirely different direction for this team, where the Riders are committing to their identity. And to me, that says, okay, there are other receivers there. Maybe this means a boost for Naaman Roosevelt, maybe Shaquille Evans, Jordan Williams, Lambert, who was Hannah's money pick a couple of weeks ago and has emerged as a really good receiver there, younger players. But I think this means that they're buying into this sort of ball possession, run the football, grind games out, win 20-17 when they can, type of mentality. And I think that's going to benefit Trey Mason. What do you guys think?
This does seem like an offense that has been trending towards running the ball. Their running back totals have been going up and up and up in fantasy, to the point where Trey Mason and Marcus Thigpen combined for nearly 30 points. They're both getting the ball. And what's interesting to me is that, man, Trey Mason at 4,000 and Marcus Thigpen at 6,000, you could get some real steals there as far as running backs go.
Thing that scares me, though, guys, is who's going to get the bulk of the carries, because I mean, you take a look at Trey Mason, he hasn't had more than 7 carries in a game all season long. We're not talking about him putting up gaudy yardage totals. He's yet to record a touchdown either receiving or on the ground. So look, I think Trey Mason's a really talented player, but with both him and Thigpen there, and Thigpen for the most part has seen a little bit more in terms of the bulk of carries, and at best they've split them. I don't know. I don't know how confident I am in either guy. Jeff, I understand why you really like Trey Mason and the tools that he brings to the table. I get that, but you take a look at what we saw, for instance, in their last game, going back to week 8. 5 carries and a touchdown for Thigpen, 7 carries and 62 yards for Mason. If that's what we're going to see, and if Thigpen's going to get the red zone carries and stuff like that, that's a scary, scary road to go down when you're talking about running back by committee situation. So I like Trey Mason. I think he's got wheels. I think he's very elusive, but I'm not ready to be putting him in a lineup until we're talking about Saskatchewan going one way and talking about who their number one is going to actually be.
Here's the thing. Here's the reality. I don't buy that, because Marcus Thigpen is not going to eat up too many of your carries. Marcus Thigpen is the Chris Rainey of the Riders offense. Trey Mason is getting more and more carries every game. And last game,
he hasn't gone higher than 7 all season long. Like, it's not like there's any evidence to support this claim.
Listen, last game, Trey Mason had 7 receptions in addition to his 7 carries. On the season, Trey Mason is outweighing Marcus Thigpen 42 carries to 26. Marcus Thigpen is at his best when he is getting a lower volume of carries. Mason is new in the CFL, and they're working him up to be the workhorse back. I can promise you that. Trey Mason is 25 years old. He was a big-time college star at Auburn, third-round NFL draft pick. They didn't bring him in here to be a running back by committee type of back. They see Trey Mason in the long term as their workhorse back that is going to get 20-plus carries a game, especially in this offense, is going to put up big numbers. Have you seen him run the football, though?
Absolutely. He's an absolute beast, and I love watching him.
I am in love with this guy.
And you're You're right. He touched the ball 14 times last week, but that's the first time he's gone over two receptions all season long. Again, as I've said a few times, he's never had more than seven carries in a game. Look, I'm not even saying that what you're saying is wrong. All I'm saying is that to sit here and tell me that there's no doubt about it, Trey Mason's going to be a fantasy stud this week or in the very near future, until Saskatchewan shows me that they are actually going to give him the bulk of the carries and commit to him as their feature back, I'm a little wary about the whole thing. Again, he has yet to record a touchdown all season long.
Don't oversell me here. I'm not saying Trey Mason is going to come out and get 30 points this week. But at $4,000, all you need is 12 or more points to make that a solid pick. But mark it down. Listen to me now. Trey Mason is going to be a star running back in this league. And we may be talking about him at this time next season as potentially the best running back in the CFL. I'm going to put that out there now. And this is a guy that is meant to handle volume. He had the SEC title record in 2013. He had 304 yards in a game on 46 carries in a championship game. He is a big game player. But have you seen him run? He's fast. He's strong. His cuts are just he's electrifying. You talk about the speed. You talk about a guy that can break the game open in one play. He can do that, and he's averaging 6 yards per carry this year.
I get concerned when I see, of course, you're splitting with Mason and Thigpen, which we talked about, but Christian Jones is right there too. He picked up 6 points. He's outscored Trey Mason 4 or 5 times this season. You're not just splitting the ball with two guys. We're going to three, and there are teams where you can get a running back where you know all of their offense that's going on the ground is going through one guy's
hands.
And so now we're splitting between three. That's where I'm getting concerned. If you want to throw it up as a Hail Mary at $4,000, if you've got the cash to do it, for sure. But do not be relying on any of these guys to pull in a big total.
In the last three games, Trey Mason, 20 carries, averaging 7.5 yards per game. He has the same rushing average as Andrew Harris this year. I'm telling you now, take it to the bank. This guy is going to be a star sooner rather than later. Running backs in the CFL take some time to get acclimated. Jones is just working him in there. And that volume, you're looking
then
for that volume.
Put him in your lineup.
You don't win fantasy championships by looking at the last game. You win fantasy championships by saying, what is he going to do next game?
Then
and by
put him
being
in your
ahead
lineup.
Of the curve, that's how you do it.
He's such a good buy at 4,000. Put him in this week.
Yeah, Pat, I'm with you. Throw him in there, Jeff.
I got him in there. You should too. Even against Calgary, everybody needs to have Trey Mason in their lineup because he is going to break the bank soon. Trey Mason, gotta love the guy. He is going to be a star in this league. I've said it many times.
So you're telling me that putting in Trey Mason, who has yet to carry the ball more than 7 times in the season, going up against the number one rush defense in the Canadian Football League, you're telling me this is the play, this is the smart move this week?
Look it up. Last game against Calgary, he did fine. He put up the numbers.
All right. I'm not quite ready to call it a hot take, but man, that's a bold
statement.
Call
it a hot take. I'll wear it.
Against Calgary, hey? All right. Well, I want to talk about me for a second. I want to pat myself on the back for picking up RJ Harris. And especially my clean sweeps of Harris's. All three of them were in the top 10 for fantasy points this weekend, and I had all three of them. But we're talking about RJ. Is he the real deal in Ottawa? How are we feeling about him? Because he's still under that $3,000 mark.
Guys, I'm surprised that we haven't, we're going to get to our bargain picks, our money picks a little bit later on, but I'm surprised. Here's a little bit of a spoiler. None of us have RJ Harris as our money pick of the week, and yet he's coming in at under $2,900 for week number 10. Had himself a breakout game with Ottawa this past week in his first game of the season. I don't know, like Jeff, I don't know if he's the real deal. I can't sit here and make this claim that no questions asked, RJ Harris is the real deal, especially in an offense that also boasts Deontay Spencer and Greg Ellingson and Brad Sinopoli. But at $2,847, that is a very attractive price. I'd be hard pressed not to have him in as a really good value flex this week.
Well, sometimes we try not to take the same money picks 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to be that
person. That's a rule for me. I'm not taking any digs at anyone here. Well, I'm trying not to. I'm trying to keep a straight face as I say this, but I'm in on RJ Harris. That's a good player, and Trevor Harris is trusting him. The thing with him is there are so many options in that Red Blacks offense, including the high volume Brad Sinopoli, who gets so many targets every week. Then now you have Greg Ellingson, who got double digit receptions last week. You add in Deontay Spencer, who they really try to force feed the ball to when they can. It doesn't leave a lot for RJ Harris. Even Dominique Rimes got into it last game. He actually had more catches than RJ Harris. He had 7 catches last week. It's not every week where Trevor Harris is going to complete 44 passes, which he did on Saturday, by the way, coming one completion shy of the single game record for completions held by Henry Burris, which he set a few years ago, 2013, I believe it was. So that's one thing that fantasy players have to be a little bit wary of, is the fact that sample size, the one game sample size, is going to be blown out of proportion a little bit, because that's not going to happen every week. I will say, though, RJ Harris has consistently been putting up numbers, and at under 3,000, he's still a pretty good buy. He just doesn't come without risk, like with anyone at that price.
Yeah, and he's trending in the right direction. You've seen more catches every week than the previous one. I think he's a great pick. I think that if you're strapped for cash, or maybe even if you're not, that you should have him in your lineup. I want to talk about Ottawa's opponent this week, and that's Winnipeg, and specifically Matt Nichols. He started the season about 4 weeks in because of injury, kind of started off slow, 10 points, 2 points. Then he had his big breakout week, 23.9 points. Since then, hasn't gotten back to the 20-point mark. How are we feeling about Matt Nichols? Are we confident in his ability? He's $8,000 this week. Is that $8,000 you're willing to part with to put Matt Nichols in your lineup?
I feel like this is a sensitive issue for Pat, so I'm going to let him go here.
Not overly sensitive, guys. I mean, Matt Nichols, I vouched for in a big way earlier this year, and I actually was able to get him and have him in my lineup in his most productive little run. He had 26 points and 17.8 points back-to-back weeks. I was able to have him in my lineup for week 5 and week 6, but since that point, his value's gone up. We're now talking about him approaching the $9,000 mark, so I'm a little less, or I guess he's just over $8,000, but still, I'm a little less, you know, inclined to put Nichols in my lineup at $8,000 as I was when he was coming in at a little bit of a better buy. The only counter that I would have, I look at other quarterbacks as more interesting plays in week 10 than I do Nichols. But even knowing that he didn't throw the ball a whole lot and only completed 13 passes against Ottawa, we're still talking about a guy that threw for 2 touchdowns, and not against Ottawa, against Hamilton, sorry. He still completed 2 touchdown passes, and while he didn't give you great fantasy numbers, still gave you around 15 points. And so I don't think that he is a terrible play right now, but I am more interested in some other plays right now just because his price tag has risen to the $8,000 range.
I'm feeling a little bit of revisionist history here. Pat saying that he got Matt Nichols at the right time. Was there not a week when...
I also got him okay. at the wrong time. There I will be is. The. I think I had him when he had 1 point as well, but I stuck
Failed
with
to
him.
Mention.
And after his really bad week, I was able to get him in with his really
right.
good week.
Fair enough. I'm skeptical on Nichols right now. I was earlier in the season, but watching the game against Hamilton, he just wasn't accurate. And there were a couple of times when he had my guy Kembrell Tompkins, who I think is an outstanding player and is going to have a very long future, a very successful future in this league. But there were a couple times he had him open in the seam where he had outrun the defender and had a good, very good few yards of separation there. And Nichols overthrew him and didn't even really give him a chance to make the catch. And this happened at least on 2 occasions. Nichols was off last week.
And so you're bitter. You're this, just bitter because no, he didn't get this, the ball to your guy.
Yeah, I said it before. This is I don't play this game with emotion. I play it with my brain. And 13 passes, as Pat pointed out, that he completed. And there were some misses there. And it just seems like from week to week, you're not entirely sure what Matt Nichols you're going to get. And that's a little bit concerning to me. So I want to see a little bit more consistency there. If I'm taking Matt Nichols, I want that to be a safe play. And in the past, I was looking at Matt Nichols as my safe quarterback that's going to give me that that floor, that solid, reliable floor. And I don't see that right now. There's too much risk. There's too much of a risk factor. So I'm staying away from Matt Nichols, and with the other options, I can't stomach it right now, even though I'm not saying he can't give you a big week sometimes. I don't trust it.
Yeah, and I feel like another part of the issue is that you know Andrew Harris is going to get at least one touchdown in the week, usually on the ground. So there's a touchdown taken away from him. I need my quarterback to get at least 20 points for it to be worth it, because quarterback prices are high. So Matt Nichols, not really somebody I'm looking to at this point. But let's talk about another quarterback. I know how Jeff feels about him, because in the lineup it just says Travis Lule is elite. So I think I'm giving away your stance here. Travis Lule, how are you feeling about him? Because his fantasy totals have not been off the charts here. Travis Lule, 12 points last week, 13 points the week before. Jeff, make your case for Travis Lule.
Travis Lule is elite. Have we heard this anywhere before? Okay, I know. We spoiled it with my lineup. Stop telegraphing everything, Hannah. You're killing me right now.
Well, stop writing point form rundowns.
You want my more detailed rundown. Travis Lule is playing at a very high level right now. Pat, we talked about this on air last week. Out in Calgary, and I like what Travis Lule is doing. We've been talking about, for it seems like years, who's this elite quarterback behind Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley, and it's gone back and forth. Oh, maybe Matt Nichols, but Jeff, what about Jeremiah Mazzoli? And then there's the Trevor Harris camp, and it's just all over the place, and it's, is this guy elite, is this guy not elite? And none of those guys have stepped up and been consistent enough, but what about Travis Lule? He's still working his way back from injury and getting comfortable, but I like what I see from him. He looks very good, and let's remember, this is a quarterback who's done it before. He's been an MOP in the league. He's played at a Grey Cup winning level, and right now, when I watch him play with my eyes and analyze it myself, not looking at stats and not looking at fantasy numbers, which aren't entirely flattering right now, I see a quarterback with no real limitations. He moves well in the pocket. He sees open receivers. He's not shy to throw it downfield. He's not scared to take a hit when he needs to. And he can seem to make all the throws on a CFL field. So keep in mind, last game he had it, he also had the touchdown pass that I believe the touchdown pass that was called back, wasn't it, before the interception happened on the screen pass? So that's a pretty significant swing in points as well, going from a touchdown to a pick. I like what Lule does, and the value that's there. I think there's an opportunity to sort of jump ahead of it and get him while the value is there, because if he plays at a high level, eventually he's going to cost a lot of money and getting closer to that Trevor Harris, Jeremiah Mazzoli range. So, yeah, I think Travis Lule is knocking on the door of being an elite fantasy quarterback. It's just a matter of time before the points are really going to come out, and why not this week against a very suspect Argos secondary?
Yeah, that's where, I mean, on the matchup and for $6,800, I think Travis Lule is a really solid week 10 buy, because I think we're talking about him going up against a secondary that is susceptible, and it's a matchup that he can get some points in. But I'm not ready to sit here and call him elite yet. Look, I think he is the number one feel-good story of the season. I wrote about it on the Monday Morning Quarterback at CFL.ca earlier this week. Like, to me, he is the best feel-good story of the season. All of what he's gone through, all of the shoulder and knee injuries that he's had to rehab from, go through the surgeries, and come all the way back. Now he gets this opportunity to be a starter again, and he's made good on that opportunity. He's 2-2 as a starter this year, and he's given the Lions the best quarterback play they've had all year long. But I'm not ready to call him an elite quarterback, because we're talking about 24 combined points the last 2 weeks. I had Lule last week. I have Lule again this week because I like the matchup. But, you know, to me, elite is reserved, whether it be talking about league play or fantasy play, elite is reserved for, you know, very specific guys. Mike Riley or Bo Levi Mitchell, you know, from a fantasy standpoint, you might want to throw in a Mazzoli or a Harris in that conversation too. I don't think Lule is there yet, but I do agree with the premise that he's trending in the right direction, and I really like the Week 10 matchup against Toronto. So I think that he is a good buy to have in your lineup, regardless of whether you think he's elite or not.
All right, well, just to clear the air, I'm sort of with you there. That's a logical argument. I'll say Travis Lule trending towards elite, certainly on the field in the game. In fantasy, yeah, it's fair to say he's not there yet, But I just like the value that's there, and I think he can climb in that direction.
Trending towards elite sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but I'll let you have it. It's kind of a middling area, and we spoke about the matchup there. So last week our discussion was, is it still fair to pick on the Lions' defense? Is it still fair to load up on guys who are playing against the Lions? I said yes. Jeff, you said no. But they held Edmonton to just 23 points and handed them a loss. A couple guys put up points, but you know, Edmonton's players didn't really feast on them like I thought they could. So have your guys' opinions changed from one week to another? Because I'm still feeling pretty okay with playing a bunch of guys up against BC. Not quite to the level of, you know, picking on Montreal, but I think they're only a step behind still.
It's funny, Jeff. I hate to give you your due, but you know, you were right. BC, that was an impressive performance against a very good offense. To see what BC did against the most high-powered passing attack in the CFL, and to see them be able to keep Mike Riley in check, keep Duke Williams in check. I know that Darrell Walker had himself a really good game. It was somebody's lock of the week last week, just saying. But no, I think that was a really impressive performance from BC. That was one of those performances that made me a little bit more of a believer in them. So, hey, I know that, I mean, clearly Jeff writes the rundowns, because just as Creever was right about the Lions, somehow you were able to sneak that in there. But I'll give you your due, because you were right.
Too many things to say at once. First of all, I'm sick from that little plug. Speaking of plugs, you have to get your own in there too. So don't be one to talk. And second of all, you guys are just...
Yeah, very, very true.
You guys
Touché.
Are giving away my rundown here. Do you... I'm sensing a little bit of hostility. Who wants to write the rundown next week? I am happy to turn that over.
I mean, not really. We're just saying it's not your best work.
I'd hate to see what it looks like if Pat wrote it.
Oh, boy.
Especially after he wins a week, if that ever happens again.
Pat was right references all over the board.
All right. I won't say much more about that. You pretty much covered it with the Lions defense. The interesting thing I'll note is there's a little bit of a change I found in their run defense when Solomon Olumemian went out of the game, and we all thought that Lions run defense was going to get torched. And I remember all of us were gushing over William Powell that week, thinking, no more Solly. The Lions run defense is struggling. William Powell is going to run all over them, back and forth, wherever he needs to go, wherever he wants to go, and even go for a leisurely jog and still get to where he needs to go on time and with lots of yards and fantasy points to go with it. And it didn't happen that way. And it turns out Herdman is a pretty good football player. And their run defense has been good, and then their secondary has held its own. So they're about a league average, pretty close to league average now in most defensive categories, even if they're still a little bit on the weak side. I guess the point there is they're not the team to pick on that we all thought they were, even with some of these lesser-known defensive backs or journeymen, as we would say. And I think a lot of the credit has to go to Mark Washington, the defensive coordinator. And he's just clearly proving to be one of the better defensive minds in the league right now.
Well, you knew we had to bring him up at some point, and I guess now is that point. Johnny Football completed 16 of 26 passes for 168 yards and rushed 3 times for 36 yards. They picked up another loss only by 7 points in Ottawa. Definitely was not like his debut. There were no interceptions, although there was nearly some trouble when he fumbled the ball at the goal line. It was recovered by one of his players, though. So crisis averted. How are we feeling about Johnny Manziel after 2 starts in the CFL?
Pat, go ahead. Be negative here. I invite you. I dare you. I welcome it. Find something for us that was negative about Johnny Manziel last week.
What do you like? That's the easiest treasure hunt ever. He finished with 6.7 fantasy points. We're talking about how we don't trust Matt Nichols, and now Johnny Manziel, who's only $1,000 less, all of a sudden there's no negativity with his 6.7 points. Look, he was better.
No.
He was better than he was in his first game, no doubt about it. He didn't throw one interception. He also didn't throw a touchdown, and we're still talking about him being very, very green when it comes to that Montreal playbook. It still looks like he is in a big-time learning curve. Look, I don't know what Johnny Manziel is going to be when it's all said and done, but to sit here and tell me that he was magic, or to sit here and tell me that he was outstanding in his second... He finished with 6.7 fantasy points and 168 yards.
He hit double digits.
He's 10.3. Come on. If you're going to – don't sell him that far short if you're going to be negative here. If you're going to put him down, at least get right. You missed his rushing points.
I'm just saying that – okay, fair enough. I missed his rushing points. He got 3.6 on the ground. You're right, 6.7 points, fantasy points through the air. Still, we're talking about 11 points total that he finished with in his second – look, we're not talking about a guy who has been able to crest himself into the must-start category. Until he shows me that the CFL is where he belongs and until he shows me that he can have real success. Look, there was plenty of moments that in both games that led me to believe that this guy has got freak athletic ability and could be a success here. And he almost scored a rushing touchdown, and that would have upped his point total a little bit more. But until he does, I'm not ready to buy in on Johnny Manziel. I'm just not.
Pat, the angry Pat Steinberg that I came across in Ireland a couple of weeks ago is sort of peeking his head out the door a little bit here. For a second start, I thought Johnny Manziel fared pretty darn well. And I think that bodes well from a fantasy perspective for him. And Hannah, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I expect you to be more of the voice of reason between us because we're clearly on opposite sides of the...
Clearly.
On opposite sides of the country here, literally and figuratively. But, man, I thought he looked good. Did you see Johnny Manziel in the pocket, evading pressure? Did you see that play where he's backed up in his own end and he's rolling out in the end zone and he just fired a dart to BJ Cunningham on the run? And Cunningham had a couple of big drops, but my goodness, the talent that was on display. And the thing that I saw with Johnny was it was starting to click. It was starting to click, as it should after a little bit more time. I mean, that first game, we can all agree, was a throwaway. The second game was more of an indication of what he's going to be able to do. And the completion percentage was better. The reads were better. And Johnny Manziel just does things that no other football player on the planet can do. Sometimes when he escapes those defenders in that pass rush and he rolls out and he's improvising, that's Doug Flutie stuff. That's Doug Flutie stuff. It is.
I just feel like you are buying way too much into moments and into flashes as opposed to the overall body of work. And that's what worries me about your characterization about Johnny Manziel. The flashes have been there, undoubtedly. We know how good an athlete he is. We know how strong his arm is. We know how elusive he is. But the overall body of work in 2 weeks does not suggest to me that I'm ready to put him into my fantasy
but
life.
But Pat, I'm not just talking about flashes. You say flashes. No, not just flashes. I'm talking about the body of work here. I'm seeing a guy that made a very, very ridiculous progression from 1 week to the next. I'm talking about a guy who just looked really good with his decisions. He got through his reads well. He looked like he's been running a CFL offense before. Yeah, he didn't put up big yards. Doug Flutie in his first year in the league had more interceptions than touchdowns, I'm pretty sure. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that seems to be the narrative around it. I know it's going to take some time with Johnny Manziel, but I think there's going to be some return on the fantasy side of things. And I think that starts this week with Edmonton. I really do. I like what I saw. And he's picking up the game fast, and the flashes that we talk about, the physical ability that's so mesmerizing, those things combined, how can you not get excited about that? You can tell me that doesn't matter. Don't tell me that doesn't matter.
I will say this.
That's what we watch for.
I'll say this. Couple of things that I really liked about Johnny Manziel in his second start. I like the fact that he was way more willing to just bring the ball down and run when there wasn't anything there. I thought that he didn't force things as much as he did in his first CFL start. That's a positive. And I also like the fact that he was able to, and I know that this is where we're going next, but he was able to work in, for instance, Ernest Jackson a little bit more. Jackson with 5 catches in Manziel's second start. And if he can start using those weapons a little bit more and relying on reliable guys like EJ, that to me was also an encouraging sign. I'm not ready to sit here and say that I'm going to put him in my fantasy lineup at $7,000. But yeah, no doubt about it. He was better in week 2 than he was in his first CFL start. I'm just not ready to buy in quite as much as you are, Creever. You sound a little fanboyish, and that's fine. You can be a Johnny Football fanboy all day, but I'm just not ready to be
below
there.
The belt. That one hurt. That one really hurt. I'm setting off an alarm on that one. I'm not even a fanboy. I get excited about exciting plays. Exciting plays excite me. I think that's fair to say.
That is fair. I liked what I saw. Definitely night and day from his first start. And I saw his receivers dropping a lot of balls that really could have helped him out. I'm not ready to throw him in my lineup, but he looks better. He looks good. A little bit more help from his receivers could go a long way.
Yeah.
And he's still saying all the right things after the game. And since we're already talking bargains in Montreal, if you're not biting on Manziel, a couple other names you could buy. As Pat said, Ernest Jackson, 2,800. He had 11 points last week. And Adarius Bowman is finally on the board. He had 8 points at only $2,900. Seems like it might be a good play, although that's coming after throwing up zeros in 4 of his past 5 weeks. So he's on the board. Jeff, he's your guy.
I'm turning red right
Are
now.
You my guys
face. How red is my face right now?
It's matching
I'm
your
blushing.
Shirt at this point. These two guys, though, real bargain pick opportunities here, money pick choices. Are you guys biting on either of these guys?
Pat, you go.
I am not. Just because I still don't trust the Montreal offense. I did like that Manziel was able to use his veterans. This is an interesting trend to watch, because I think that the guy that you would point to and say, who's the best playmaker on the Alouette? Jeff, would we probably be on the same page when we said BJ Cunningham's the best, like, just pure playmaker?
Oh, 100%. There's no one even close to him, matching him in talent. And I think, sorry, I'll let you go, but I think Eugene Lewis is the second closest there.
So, You say, okay, BJ Cunningham is the top playmaker in Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
But what I liked about Manziel is that he leaned on his veterans. And guys like Ernest Jackson and Adarius Bowman have put together long CFL careers because not only are they explosive, not only are they fast and have great athletic ability, but they're reliable. We're not talking about a lot of drops. I know that Bowman has had his drops, and even Jackson has had his drop issues earlier in his career. But now where they are now is veteran receivers. You know, they run crisp routes, and you're able to rely on them. So if you're Johnny Manziel, you know when Ernest Jackson is going to break because he breaks when he's supposed to. You know when Adarius Bowman is going to curl because he curls when he's supposed to. And as he becomes a little bit more comfortable, and as he continues to acclimate to the Canadian game, I wonder if he doesn't lean on veterans like Jackson and Bowman more so than he does on guys like Lewis and Cunningham, just because those guys are so reliable and just because they're a nice comfort blanket for him. That's why I'm interested in guys like Bowman and Jackson going forward, especially in the next couple of weeks.
I just see a big line at the hot dog stand, and they're running out of hot dogs. They're just not enough footballs to go
what?
Around and too many guys there and too much uncertainty and no clear-cut guys stepping ahead. I mean, we talk about BJ Cunningham being the clear-cut number one, but he's been so inconsistent the last 5-6 games, even all year, and that's just because of the offense, but also because of the guys they have. You talk about Darius Bowman, Ernest Jackson, TJ Graham is starting to play now. Geno Lewis, who had a breakout game 2 games ago in Manziel's debut, didn't have a catch last week. Adarius Bowman now lining up at boundary wideout, which is a great spot for him. Good chance to catch a lot of balls there. But how do you zero in, even if he's cheap, how do you zero in on one of those guys? It's just you're playing roulette there. You're basically playing roulette.
Okay. It's take 2 of Stamps and Riders in week 7. Calgary edged out Saskatchewan 34-22 in take 1, which is higher scoring than I was expecting. Are you guys buying in on this matchup? It's 2 big defensive teams.
Oh, I'm staying away from this one, guys. I look at it and I see the top 2 teams in terms of defending the run going head to head. You've got the number 1 team in Calgary against the pass and a top 5 team in Saskatchewan against the pass as well. These two teams are so strong defensively. I just don't know, as much as the last game, maybe the point totals were a little high. It wasn't a 10-8 game, but I still don't think we're talking about big-time point totals here. I look at some of the other games. There's 3 other games in Week 10, and I look at them as far better candidates to put up points. Ottawa, Winnipeg, BC, Toronto, even Edmonton, Montreal. There seems like there's more potential for points in those games. Just seems like Calgary, Saskatchewan, knowing, Jeff, how many times when we were yelling at each other about Trey Mason, how much did you talk about ball control? That's how Calgary plays. That's how Saskatchewan wants to play. I just don't know if there's a lot of big-time offensive totals, knowing how these offenses are structured and how good these defenses are. I'm staying away from Calgary, Saskatchewan.
The last time these two teams met, and Pat, your senses are bang on, The Calgary Stampeders, yes, the Calgary Stampeders had 12 first downs in a game. That is hard to believe. It seems like there's an error in the stats there. 12 first downs for the Calgary Stampeders. Sure, they won the game. Bo Levi Mitchell had 187 passing yards. He put up points because he had three touchdowns. He was opportunistic. But that was a disaster for the Stamps offense. Unless you had one of those guys that got the touchdowns, then at least it was salvaged. But if that's where this game is trending, and you're not betting on that again, 12 first downs to getting three touchdowns out of that, that's an unlikely ratio. I these defenses are just so good. And Pat, like you said, it's all about ball possession. I'm thinking a very low scoring game. I'd be surprised if either of these teams reaches 20 this week.
And one more guy to talk about who we don't talk about very often because of his price tag, and that's Mike Riley. I know you guys are kind of in the do not take column, overpriced for you. I'm thinking about it this week because up against Montreal the first time, he finally got a total up over 40 points, which is the kind of total you're looking for if you're spending $14,000 on a guy. 32 of them came through the air, and he tacked on another nearly 10 on the ground with his own feet. So Mike Riley at $14,000, are you biting on this guy? Is this the week up against Montreal? Do you think he's putting up another 40-plus point week?
And I just want to say that I just want to point out the late game audible here in the adjustment. It was very Johnny Manziel like with that quick read and the addition of the Mike Riley topic. Just quickly, I'm a yes. If you're ever going to take Mike Riley in your lineup at that price tag, this is the week to do it. He's going to carve up the Montreal Alouettes. Trevor Harris should have thrown for 600 yards against those guys. Deontay Spencer dropped a long ball. There were a couple of fumbles. Trevor Harris could have had 600 passing yards. Mike Riley's going to do something similar. So if you can make it work, get him in your lineup.
For Mike Riley to be worth the buy, though, you almost need him to get 35, 40 points. And I'm not saying that there's that's not going to happen. There's a decent chance he does tear apart Montreal because what happened last time, the struggles that Montreal's had all season defensively. I mean, there's a good chance that Riley puts up good numbers. But to have to almost need a guaranteed 35, 40, 45 points from Riley each and every week to make that $14,000 price tag worth it. Even knowing the matchup, I'm shying away. Darrell Walker all day. I'm even thinking about Duke Williams and getting him in the lineup, knowing that, you know, he's due for a breakout, and you wonder if going up against the Owls isn't the nice tonic for him to break out into. But I still, even against the Alouettes, and even knowing he put up 40 plus last time he played them, 14,000, still too much for Riley, even with the good matchup.
I think that Mike Riley is going to get 40 points this week. I really feel confident in that. And maybe I find a way to get him in my lineup. Listen, if you're, and I see where you're coming from, Pat, but if you're not getting Mike Riley in your lineup now, you're never getting him in your lineup. Let's be honest.
Yep.
He's not going in your lineup this year if he's not in this week. This is the week on the entire schedule to have Mike Riley in your lineup. Is it not?
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking about it. He's in my top two choices for a quarterback, and I'm thinking two very different strategies. Mike Riley is one of them. The other one is part of our great debate, actually, which I think is next. And yeah, they're very different strategies.
Ask yourself this. If Mike Riley can put up 40 points, is there a quarterback who is roughly half his price, say a Johnny Manziel or a Travis Lule or a McLeod Bethel Thompson, who you're certain is going to get 20 points? Half the points at half the salary? I'm not sure of that. So I really do feel like Riley, I'm that confident. He should be putting up that kind of game against this team. Let me, another tidbit I learned today, actually. Mike Riley is on pace for 52 total touchdowns this year. There is one quarterback, I believe. I've done the research myself. I haven't had Steve Daniel, our mastermind statistician, confirm this. But I can only find one quarterback in the history of the game that has had 50 combined touchdowns before. Do you know who that is? He's done it four times.
Doug Flutie.
Yes, you got it. Doug Flutie. So that is a legendary season Mike Riley's on pace for, and I wouldn't be shocked if he puts it in the end zone. He had five against Montreal last time. I could see him repeating something like that.
Still, to need 40 points, just to, it's too rich for my blood. That's $14,000. That's more than a quarter of your salary each and every week. So, but you're bang on, Creever. If you're not getting Riley in this week, you're not getting him in ever. I think that might be the sanest and most accurate thing that you've ever said. But guys, as we transition to the great debate, I'm really interested as to where you two sit on somebody who is less than half the price of Mike Riley. This is my first time getting to mediate the great debate and determine who ends up being the winner. I'm getting my stopwatch ready right now because Hannah and Jeff are going to go head to head. Mike Riley's worth $14,000. McLeod Bethel Thompson, who had 30 plus points in his CFL starting debut 2 weeks ago, is only valued at $6,000 this week as Toronto's at home to BC on Saturday afternoon. So the great debate topic, the great debate question is, at $6,000, can you make a case for McLeod Bethel Thompson being in your lineup? And I think because she is our defending champion, I think we have to start with Hannah. So Hannah, you go first. Is McLeod Bethel Thompson at $6,000 a good play in week 10?
Okay, McLeod Bethel Thompson at $6,000 I think is a great pick. Jeff said if you think Riley can get 40 points at $14,000, are you confident another guy could get 20 points at their half of his price? And I think yes, he's up against Toronto. I like the matchup, and I feel more confident about him at $6,000 than I do about Manziel at $7,000 or Lule at $6,800. They both got 10 points, 12 points. McLeod Bethel Thompson walked out there and got over 30 points. I'm not saying he has to do that again. I'm just saying he can put up at least 20. I feel good about it.
All right, Creever, that was about right on 30 seconds for Hannah. You're on the other side. Is McLeod Bethel Thompson a smart play in week 10?
Obviously, there's value in McLeod Bethel Thompson at $6,000. However, I think it's too early to buy into the hype, and I'm not there yet. Remember that most of McLeod Bethel Thompson's production in his first career start came in the second half against a team that was winning by quite a bit. Those passing against a team that's up big is a little bit different than passing in a close game. I think that I need to see more from McLeod Bethel Thompson. I also not a big fan of the Argos receivers. That offense has been anemic all year. Two big starts in a row from him, I don't see it.
I gotta say, this was an easy choice. Our great debate winner is, and it has nothing to do with my preordained biases against Creever, but Hannah's our winner. Just because the points were very, very salient, and all I could have screaming in my head, Creever, was Johnny Manziel at $7,000. You're all over that guy, and he's got a combined like 15 fantasy points in two games. McLeod Bethel Thompson goes over 30 in his first game. He's less than Manziel, and he's a bad play. It exploded my brain. So Hannah, you're the winner.
Thank you. I'm legitimately thinking about putting him in my lineup this week. Depends on how much I want to drop at quarterback. I'm either thinking of Riley or Bethel Thompson. It's going to take the rest of my team in a very different direction.
I think that's a mistrial, or I don't know what you can call it in this event. Pat made up his mind going into this. Come on.
You know what, Jeff? Take the loss.
We need
grace.
A new judge. We need a new
sportsmanship, Jeff. Sportsmanship, please.
All right, it's time for our money picks and our locks of the week. Our 3-minute warning.
3-minute warning now, or is it? It is the warning.
So let's start with our money pick. Pat, let's start with you. We definitely didn't make fun of what you were doing strategy-wise earlier in the show. Who do you have in your money pick?
I don't know why this is such a big deal. I don't know why going with the same guy 2 weeks in a row is worthy of ridicule.
Back
I mean, Kevin Elliott was a good pick last week. He almost had 19 points. He's still only at $3,600. And all of a sudden, I think Travis Lule, Elliott's played two games so far this season. I think Lule's found himself a nice little target. I think he likes passing to Elliott. I think that he finds a reliable target there. So I think going up against Toronto, who gives up yards through the air, I still think Elliott at $3,606 is a solid play. So yes, it's 2 weeks in a row, but isn't that more gutsy going with the same guy twice in a row? I don't know why this is ridicule worthy.
You gotta spread the love. You got the people want to know what's up and coming. You already gave him that name, but fine, you can have it because we've all done some locks of the week in back-to-back weeks.
It's like that one hit wonder on the radio and that band that just has that artist that has that one amazing song, and it's all they've done, and they just keep playing it over and over again. And it's like, well, I had that one great hit, you know, and we're just going to keep playing it.
Granted,
that's what it is.
He's had two pretty solid games since returning to action. It's not just one good game. He's had two pretty solid games. I don't know what he's ever. Who hurt you, Jeff? Who hurt you?
No, I'm not putting this on Kevin Elliott. I'm putting this on you. You're the one that had the hit, and you're just, it's the same song again. My money pick is, because I'm changing it up every week, I've never picked the same player twice, I don't think.
Okay.
I have not. Anthony Coombs, back in the lineup. Supposed to be back in the lineup for the Toronto Argonauts this week. He was close a couple of weeks ago, but they decided to hold him out through the bye. I think that was smart. Coombs has had injury problems throughout his career, but when he's been on the field, he has been productive. He checks in at $2,856 this week, under $3,000, and he steps into that slot back role where he's going to get a high volume of catches. Coombs, on at least four occasions, was eight catches or more last season in Mark Trestman's offense. I think with a young quarterback, they are going to lean on him a lot, and in point per reception, he's going to come up big.
My money pick this week is Nate Behar in Edmonton. He's going for $2,500, and he's a guy I was looking at the beginning of the season as a money pick guy. He was getting some catches, he was finding his feet, and then kind of hit a downslope around week five. I think he's really picked it up. Last week he had 12 points. I think he's caught Riley's eye. I think he's got his trust. I think Nate Behar is going to have another effective week. On to the locks of the week. These guys are in our lineups. Jeff, let's start with you. Who is your lock of the week?
Well, it's funny. Every week when I get the lineups and I decide to change things up a little bit from you guys and I go away from Duke Williams, because every week you have him in your lineups. For good reason, I suppose. But this week I'm going with Duke Williams as my lock of the week. He's had two rough starts in a row, and the slot backs, the star slot backs, whether it's, every week it's someone different. Last week it was Greg Ellingson. Duke Williams did it a couple of weeks ago against Montreal. The slot backs have killed the Alouettes this year, and I think Duke Williams is going to have another monstrous game. He's due. It's been a while since he's put up those big numbers. Duke has to be in your lineup this week. Has to be.
I am sticking with that same team. I've called an audible, and I've changed my lock of the week. This is who I'm confident in for week number 10. Eskimos running back CJ Gable. I love the matchup against the Montreal Alouettes, who are giving up more than 126 yards on the ground each and every game. I know Gable's been a little bit more hit and miss this year than he was in 2017, especially in his time with the Eskimos, but going up against this Montreal defense and going up against an Alouettes team that has really struggled against the run all year long, I think CJ Gable at 74-66 is going to have himself a whale of a game. CJ Gable, Eskimos running backs, my lock of the week.
I am not quite as confident in my lock of the week as I normally am, but I am going SJ Green at $7,100. He had a massive week with McLeod Bethel Thompson throwing him the ball. He had 35 points. I don't need 35 points from him, but I do need a good total. I feel good about the matchup up against BC. And that's really why I'm leaning towards this Bethel Thompson Green combo. I think it could be good. So SJ Green at 7,100 is my lock of the week.
One start was all it took to convince you, huh?
One massive start. I was cutting that game. I watched every snap. It looked awesome.
I'm still bitter about this. I should have won the great debate. I'm upset. I'm gonna hold a grudge now. Next time out there, you're going to get a little bit of attitude from me. I'm going to be ready for it. As long as Pat's not officiating.
Here's the most important public service announcement ever. As much as Jeff and I yell at each other on this podcast, we actually really do like each other. So I just needed to make sure that we end the podcast on a friendly note. I think Jeff is a quality human being and has quality football knowledge. I mean, we all know that about Hannah, but I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we also know that I feel that about Jeff. So that was very important. Guys, good stuff. That was a lot of fun for the week 10 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast.
Hold on. I also have a public service announcement, a little unrelated, but I want to make sure I get it out there. Get those lineups in, and just keep in mind, if you're a little bit late on it, you can always put that lineup in. There's a game on Sunday. Put your lineup in on Sunday morning. Make your team from one game, because I had two people from our office come up to me this week and say they're traveling, they're on the road, whatever happened. Brody Lawson being one of them. You all know her.
She couldn't get her lineup in on time, and she picked all players from the Ottawa-Montreal game, low-scoring game, 24-17, and she got over 80 points. And our comms guy, Lucas Barrett, also did the same thing. He had over 100 points, so you could still do it. Get those lineups in. It's never too late.
Whenever you get them in, CFLFantasy.TSN.ca is the website. Remember, the season-long winners going home with $10,000. You can also win some extra cash playing CFL Pick'em. Go to pick'em.cfl.ca. Make your picks on a weekly basis. Davis Sanchez and James Cebulski each week have the waggle. Make sure you tune in again for our Big Brother podcast at CFL.ca as well. That'll do it for the Week 10 edition of the CFL Fantasy Podcast. For Hannah Nordman on Twitter, at HL Nordman. For Jeff Creever, at Jeff Creever, and me, at Fan960 Steinberg. That'll do it. We will talk to you in Week 11. Guys, we're almost at the halfway mark of the 2018 season. It is crazy to believe. Talk to you next week. Good luck in Week 10. It's been the CFL Fantasy Podcast.